The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Settles in your soul. Yes, it does. Settles right in that old soul, doesn't it, Christina?
For sure, 100%.
Morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa. This is Jefferson State of Mind, broadcasting live from KCNR Studios in downtown Reading, 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, and 1460 AM, your talk radio. You can also stream us live at KCNR1460.com, KCNR1460.com. And we are archiving forever and ever. Today is going to be a fun day. We're going to do several different things here. We're going to go from talking some things politically briefly, and then we're going to talk about the schools. We're going to talk about what we can do in our school system. This is going to be a continuing soiree of liberty, as it always is on this particular channel. And I'd like to introduce Christina, our producer. How are you, Christina?
Good morning. Happy Sunday morning.
Happy Sunday
I am
morning.
Doing great. Thank you for asking.
You're welcome.
How are you this Sunday?
It's good. I mean, I'm always happy. No one's hurt me yet.
Yeah.
So I know it's early. I'm getting a look from these two across the table. Talking about these two across the table, I have Dominic Santangelo.
Hi, Terry.
And I have his beautiful wife, Patricia.
Hello.
Anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about something called the CRA. And I'm going to have Dominic talk about that. That's the California Republican Assembly. Dominic is the president of our chapter here in Shasta County. So, Dominic, give us a brief background on yourself. And then let's hear what the CRA is and give us the quick pitch.
Okay. Well, I'm 39 years old.
And you were born where? Because you wanted to be with your mother, right?
Yeah,
okay.
I was born. California Republican Assembly has been in existence since 1935. It is the oldest and most influential Republican volunteer organization. And people running for office seek our endorsement. It's a coveted endorsement because what we do is we vet candidates, and we vet candidates towards our values and what we believe as an organization. Just a few things are: we believe that the federal tax system is abusive. We believe in free enterprise. We believe in family values, the sanctity of life, national defense, right to bear arms, and that we are a Judeo-Christian foundation. We hold that the Holy Scriptures to our faith. And so the CRA has chapters, county chapters, in most counties of California. It has grown, like the interest in voting and everything else, since the grown a lot since the 2020 elections. A lot of people are interested in that. Unlike the Central Committee, the CRA, we don't have to adhere to a chain of command. Our members vet candidates, and vet them to what we believe and what our values are. And then we vote, and it takes two-thirds of our membership to endorse a candidate. We elect officers once a year by our members, and we're, you know, the Central Committee is a public group, and the citizens of Shasta County in this election will be voting on people who want to be on the Central Committee. It's on your ballot in your supervisory district, by supervisory district. But we don't do anything like that. You can join. Membership in the California Republican Assembly is $25 a year. $5 of that goes to a federal assembly. $10 stays with the state assembly, California Republican Assembly, and $10 comes to our local chapter.
You know, I think the thing that I found very interesting about the California Republican Assembly, seems to me like there's a real wave of that. You said it started in 1935, but I'm noticing now, especially a lot of the things in Southern California, that these groups are getting a little bigger. And one of the things that seemed to really ring true with them is they always talk about how the rhinos are not in their groups. I like the idea of the vetting process you talked about. Because when you look at what happens here, you guys are actually out there really. And one thing I have to say about that I've seen here in Shasta County and in a lot of other counties, when you guys endorse candidates, you really stand behind them. I have to say that you're very unafraid. So the Republican Central Committees, even though many of you are on the Republican Central Committees, aren't you? Because I notice there's a lot of cross-pollination.
Right,
is that
there
true?
Is. Yes. Yeah, we have what, Patricia? We have probably about 8 people that are in both the Central Committee and the SCRA, Shasta County. And that's good, in my opinion, because we pollinate a little bit on the Central Committees and keep our values while we go on the Central Committees and, you know, hold them accountable, hold the other people accountable. If we can.
That's a great point, because the thing I really noticed about all the CRAs that I've been involved with, a lot of them in Southern California, is that you guys seem to be, the Central Committee seem to bleed Republican. They bleed Republican. I mean, everything's about being a Republican, good, bad, or indifferent. I mean, you know, whoever the Republican is, he could be the spawn of Satan, and if he's running, they'll vote for him, or endorse him, or stand behind him. And most of the CRA groups that I've seen are very independent that way. They're looking toward the Constitution. They're looking toward our liberties and our rights. And to me, it's pretty exciting, because I think to a lot of people, even though you guys started in 1935, I think it's new. Mm-hmm. I really do. I'm seeing a lot of growth. There's a new one going, Palm Desert and Palm Springs is now having a new California Republican Assembly, brand new.
Oh, yeah. I speak with our state president often. And clarify some things, and he's just almost besides himself by the growth that's going on, especially in Southern California.
Yeah.
And up here, we want to try to get some more chapters in the different counties that don't have it. It's very hard in the rural counties because we're so far apart. But you know, myself and somebody from the state would go up, speak with interested citizens in Modoc County or wherever, and try to get a CRA out there, try to get a CRA chapter. It's fun. And the more you get into the California Republican Assembly, the more you like it. The more you just feel comfortable. This is home. This feels good to me. I know I feel that way.
That's great. Now, Patricia, is her passion seems to be the educational system. And early on, when you were raising your kids, you certainly used that passion to another level, basically saying, hey, this ain't working. I'm going to do this for my kids. I know that and as we've gone around, you folks that are listening, oh, by the way, if you have a question for either Patricia or Dominic, the phone number is 530-605-4567, 530-605-4567. I know that a lot of people have heard, because I've read these at a lot of different meetings, all the different laws that have happened, and a lot of people think that all this horrible stuff with the gender situation and everything else just happened. And as you had pointed out, and Patricia really is the godmother of this, she basically put together for all of us the research on all this stuff that you guys are hearing that have never met her down in Southern California, especially the CRA people. And they've never had heard this before. I was reading it to them. You did the research for it. You got it together. And the one thing I have to say about you, Patricia, and then I want you sort of to expound on your story, but the one thing I want to say about Patricia is that she never really jumped out and said, hey, I need to take credit for this. Yet she has influenced people she doesn't know because of her research. And the one thing I can say is that this lady will speak with passion and the truth, and go get him, sister. Tell them about your story, and Dominic, and you can share about your story, and then tell us about this school system. How do we fix it, or is it even fixable? Go ahead.
Wow, that's a lot. Okay. Well, my story is that I knew from the very beginning. I knew when I was a teenager that I didn't like the way the system worked. I didn't care for the pedagogy of the public school system. It didn't work for me. I just didn't think it was good. But I didn't know what else was out there. Well, I was a teenager during the 70s. John Holt was very popular in the 70s, and he was a big proponent of alternative education, learning styles, and all that sort of thing. So he became popular to the point where he actually had articles in popular magazines. I started reading those, and it really sparked something in me, because I thought, well, there is another way to do this. We don't have to do it this way. So my first interest in alternative education really came from that. It wasn't really, it had nothing to do with my values so much, like my Christian values or my worldview or anything. It was basically about getting the right kind of education for our kids. Mm-hmm. And so I started learning about that. So that was really my first step, my introduction into that, knowing that when I had children, they were not going to go to public school, because I just felt like it wasn't the best place for them to learn, to be creative and to become lifelong learners and to be curious and to love to learn. I felt like everything about the way the public school is set up kills all of that. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, then, you know, fast forward, I get married, fast forward, I have my first child. By then, like a lot of us, I'm taking my faith a lot more seriously. So now I'm really exploring my faith as a Christian. And that's when I start going, oh my goodness, that, you know, there's even a greater reason that my children don't belong in public school. Mm-hmm. They're hostile to my faith. They're hostile to my worldview. And so then I started studying really more about the foundation and the history of the public school system, how it was really built. And that's when I discovered that the foundation is rotten. And because it was built really on a foundation of socialism. Mm-hmm. And if the foundation's rotten, then the whole house is rotten. And you're not going to fix it. You got to bulldoze that thing and start all over again. So I realized that my children didn't belong there. It wasn't until later on, because I started homeschooling in 1987. Wow. During those pioneer years, and homeschooling was kind of tough back then. And, you know, we tried not to leave the house during school hours because we didn't want people asking questions, that kind of thing. We didn't have the internet, so all of our curriculum was bought out of paper catalogs if we could get our hands on any. And there were a lot of books that we couldn't even get unless we had a friend who was a teacher who could get a book for us. And so we would go, it would be like black market, you know, we'd go to somebody's garage and they'd have stacks of textbooks that we could buy and take home, you know, somebody that was a teacher. And so then, so that's how it was. Those early days were very different than homeschool. And so we were the pioneers, and we did fight and we did struggle, and now homeschooling.
I would imagine financially it was
Yeah, sure. We lived on one income. We made that choice, though. That was our choice. I'm not whining about it. I'm just saying that was a choice we made because we felt like it was that important. And, you know, we brought these kids into the world, and it was our job to do absolute as much for them as we possibly could, and to do our absolute best. And being Christians, you know, the scripture says that we're supposed to train them up in the way they should go, and we're supposed to be teaching them when we're at the side of the road and when we stand up and when we sit down. And how are we going to do that when they're spending, you know, 1,100 hours a year with somebody else, and we're not even getting the best time of their day? You know, how are we supposed to train them? They're being trained in somebody else's worldview, not ours. And that worldview is decidedly socialistic. And so, you know, that was the big part of it. And the law thing really didn't become a huge issue for me. I mean, I knew about the anti-prayer, anti-God. I knew about all of that. But the list that you talk about, that sort of came into being later on when I started my own private school independent study program. And that was in 2000. I started that. And when I started that, I started doing a lot of research into the legal issues and educational code because I wanted to make sure that I was keeping everybody on track so nobody was going to get in any trouble. And then in my school, I had a lot of people who were hoping to get their children into college. And so I needed to know a lot about what the laws were and what the codes were and, you know, how they could get into college straight out of homeschooling. And so that was when I started waking up to what was going on in California with the laws and the codes and things. And that was when the list started, because then I was connected with groups like Homeschool Legal Defense, and these people have done amazing things for our freedom to homeschool and keeping us free, and a Pacific Justice Institute and Family Protection and just all these different, and they're constantly sending out newsletters and telling us, look at this law and look what they're doing. So that was really what woke me up. And so I started this list, which I would hand out to people.
Yeah, I noticed it starts in 1999.
Yeah.
Great.
I started handing that out to people. Yeah. And, you know, usually if somebody was already thinking about how public school wasn't working for them, then the list meant something to them. But a lot of people, you know, if they were just full on in the public school track, they'd just kind of say, this isn't happening here, so I'm not going to worry about it. Or my schools, they have good teachers. Yeah. We're fine here. Yeah, so.
I think the thing that you really bring to light here is that really and truly, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, I can't afford to not have my kid in public school. You know, and you did three things. First of all, you made that sacrifice, and you made it because of the importance of what your responsibility is, those three words. And that's what you did. And so, in essence, you took that and you took it seriously about training up your children. You know, I hear a lot of people saying, well, you know, either, you know, I can't afford not to take my kid in there. I have to work. We both have to work, blah, 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 blah. And I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing. I know that we raised our kids on my income. That was it. Very similar. My kids went to a Christian school. All of them graduated from there. For some of them, it did good. Some of them, you know. But anyway, they graduated, and my wife worked at the school and around the school all day. She was with them all day long. I think the thing that you really nailed there is the fact that you have to make a sacrifice because of the importance of this responsibility. And I think that's the key to it. The school system now, I believe, is broken. Do you think there's any way to fix the school system as it stands right now?
No, not at all. And the main reason for that is the history of the school system. I won't go into that because that'll bore everybody. But there, if you read and learn about the history of American public education, you realize that the foundation that it's built on is so rotten that there is really no way to fix it. It needs to be taken down. The only people that our public schools are good for, there are people that it's good for, and those are people who have those values. They share those sort of socialistic values. They have that socialistic worldview.
Yeah.
And that works for them because they're getting their worldviews reinforced for their children every day. So
yeah.
Why wouldn't they love the public school system? It's teaching their worldviews to their children.
Well, I know now there's a school initiative out. There's an initiative out about parental rights. I mean, even it's hard for me even to say those two words, parental rights. I mean, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like, seriously?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that there's an initiative out now. And we all know that initiatives cost a lot of money. You've got to get a lot of signatures. What do you think about these initiatives and what's your take on going that route to try to establish something we should have anyway, I think. But anyway, go ahead.
I think it's a waste of time. It saddens me because so many of us have fought for so long and have sacrificed to change things and to take our children out. And, you know, we've lived on a single income. We've done whatever we have to do. I mean, I've known parents who were very, very poor, and they sacrificed in order to teach their children because they felt so strongly about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's, you know, people who were, they had one car. Mom and five kids had to drive dad to work every morning, and then they drove and picked him up after work. And, you know, dad's a janitor at the school. But they were committed. And so all these people have sacrificed so much to give people the freedom to be able to take their kids out of public school and to do something the right way and to train up these kids in the real way they should go. And then to see them saying, well, getting a couple people on a school board is going to make a difference. It's not. It's not going to change anything. And it's certainly
not going
to.
What makes you say that?
Well, because we have the laws, right? So the only thing that's going to change it is to change the laws. So if we could change these laws, if we could go back and prove that these laws are unconstitutional.
Which they are.
Then we could change the law. Then we could. It could be different.
Okay, so let's look at this for a second. That's a great point. Okay, so the only way we can change the law is through the legislative body of California.
Mm-hmm.
We have 63 Democrats in the assembly,
mm-hmm.
17 Republicans. Four of those usually vote with the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
We have 32 Democrats in the Senate, state Senate. 8 Republicans, and we have the spawn of Satan as our governor. So as we look at all that, I couldn't agree with you more. And what's to stop them? I mean, I scratch my head. We have to have parental rights. We're trying to get rights in a system that's a socialistic system,
mm-hmm.
run by communists.
Right.
And we're trying to put through a constitutional initiative to change something, and only they... The legislative body. We're not a democracy, folks. The legislative body either changes this or they don't change it. And as you were saying, referendums. What we'd have to have a referendums on these laws. They'd have to be taken off the books. And the only jurisdiction of that is the legislative body or, and I'll leave it with this, Article 18, Section 3 of the California Constitution. We can, as the electorate, have an initiative that will amend the Constitution with a new amendment. What's that going to take?
Yeah.
So I think that, do you think pulling them out is the only answer?
I do. At this point, I think pulling them out is the only answer. And that doesn't necessarily mean homeschooling. There are other things. There are a lot of options. There are, you know, if you're really committed, you can make co-ops. Co-ops are great because then parents can share the responsibility. So you can work part-time, you can work from home, you can do what you need to do, but you can share that responsibility. I would really like to see somebody start a nonprofit that could raise money for helping people get scholarships or helping people with tuition to go to private schools.
You know, I think that's great, and we're going to have to take our break, but I want to come back to that. You talked about options, and then you talked about, you know, maybe a nonprofit. I love that. Okay, we're going to come back, after the break. If we have a caller, hang on till after the break. Time has come for 51. Christina, let's get it done.
Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Shout out to Redding Rancheria. Appreciate you guys for all your help. With the help that you guys gave us, we were able to stick around, retain some of our employees, and make sure all the customers got what they needed. Thank you, guys.
Hi there. Us here at the Post Office Saloon would like to thank the Redding Rancheria for supporting us and our community through the COVID pandemic.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Get ready for a night of musical enchantment with Edwin McCain in the Wind River Resort and Casino Event Center on Friday, April 5th. Immerse yourself in the magic of his unforgettable hits like I'll Be and I Could Not Ask for More. Get your tickets now and let the music take you on a journey you won't forget. Tickets include $10 free slot play. For tickets or complete details, visit WindRiver.com or call 1-800-280-YOU-WIN. Find your moment at Wind River Resort and Casino.
Everybody has been dealing with the availability of homeowners insurance in Northern California. Companies not writing your home insurance anymore are leaving the state altogether. Siskiyou Insurance has hired a specialist specifically for dealing with a homeowners crisis here in Shasta County. He specializes in what the market is doing, coverages, and which companies may be able to help. Call Brian Dews at Siskiyou Insurance Services for your home or auto consultation. Siskiyou Insurance Services, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
We'd like to thank the Redding Rancheria for all their community support, including the bike shop. They do so much for our community, and we're beyond grateful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rancheria. You are the ones we can always count on to help us out in tough times. They're the people that have always been there for us, much more so than anyone else in our community. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Redding Rancheria. Proud to play our part.
It's nice to look over at Christina because she has rhythm. I love Wynn Carpenter, and he's my brother, but he does not have rhythm. The last time Wynn danced to a song in here, we asked him never to do that again. I love you, brother, but don't dance. Anyway, I am here with Patricia Santangelo, her husband Dominic. We are talking all about schools. We've just talked about something as far as referendums and the assembly and the jurisdiction of the assembly to maybe do something. And we have Melissa Hunt on the phone. She is running for Assembly District 1 for Shasta County, and we are excited about that. We're excited about her running for assembly. And I know for me, I've known Melissa for a long time. She was a school teacher. So what say you, my dear? How are you?
Good morning, friends. How are you? I'm good.
Good. So tell me stories. What do you think? You going to get elected, go in there, and just go in and go to all these laws and just tear them up? What are you going to do?
Well, actually, first of all, you've got the salt of the earth in front of you with Dominique and Patricia. Love these guys. Yes, I was a former teacher of a master's degree in education. All that aside, when I am out campaigning, I always go right back to the a butt in the chair is financing that public schools get. And I'd love to hear Patricia address that part of it in the way of If that butt is taken out of the classroom, the public school classroom, should the financing follow it to private schools? I personally am a product of public and private school, public school all growing up, and then when I got into high school, I went to private school. My parents did that, and for reasons we're not going to go into that has nothing to do with me. and anyway, I'm a believer in that money should follow the students, but not if there's strings attached. And that would go into the accreditation too process. I spoke with a lady this week, and she grew up in a one room schoolhouse out of Aetna, outside of Aetna, not in Aetna, but outside of Aetna. And she and her two siblings all have engineering degrees, and it goes right back to that school and how they learned with their amazing teacher that she still highly regards. So anyway, good morning, Patricia and Dominique. I want to hear what your thoughts are.
Thank you, Melissa. Thanks for calling in.
Absolutely. You guys have a wonderful day.
You too. Thank you. So, yeah. So anyway, that's interesting as far as the money that maybe, you know, goes to private schools, school vouchers, things like that. Explain before we get back into the options and before we get back into the nonprofit idea, tell us about the accreditation process so people know what that is. And I know we dealt with that where my kids went to school because they went to a private Christian school. Anyway, go ahead, Patricia.
Accreditation. Well, okay, it's not as important as you think it is.
Okay.
And both of our kids graduated from home school. One went on to graduate from UC Davis, and the other one went on to graduate from Cal Poly San Luis Obispo.
Nice.
And so, you know, homeschools aren't accredited. There's no way to do that. The only way to get accreditation as a school is to be a public school, because you have to pass the public school. You have to jump through all of their hoops in order to, and one of the things you have to have for accreditation is you have to have an actual, like a brick and mortar school. You have to have a classroom full of people and a teacher, because they have to come and watch that teacher teach. So there's all these rules that don't apply to alternative types of education. So, and the accreditation is really part of the public school system. So when you learn about how broken the public school system is, you realize the accreditation doesn't really matter. Now, Christian schools do have their own accreditation that they can get.
Yep.
And that's, but that's also for an actual school.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has to be a traditional type of a school in order to get that accreditation. It doesn't, but what I found experientially is that it really doesn't matter. I've got people that graduated from my homeschool group who, you know, are doctors and lawyers and cops and, you know, every walk of life. They've all, you know, none of them had any problems getting into college, going to college, graduating. Yeah. It was not a problem.
Right. Yeah, I've got a question for both of you, actually. You know,
so do I.
Is there something?
I got a question too,
Melissa.
So with
Melissa.
Oh, Melissa, you're still there. I didn't know.
Oh, heck yeah!
Yeah.
If that's the gimp,
okay.
If that's
you
the
surprised
gimp,
us. we're still there.
If that's the gimp, though, Patricia, that's holding the funding, following the hiney that whatever classroom that they're in, then that's the part that needs changed, because I was in the classroom. I wasn't in the office.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what you know in the way of running a school. So if, and I understand the accreditation part in the way of Christian schools compared to public schools.
Right.
But my question is what about that money following the student,
well,
no matter who that is?
You know, here's the real deal on the money, okay? 60% of the money comes from the federal government. 60%.
Right.
And with H.R. 1585, which was basically a law that Doug LaMalfa wanted to put forward, he wanted to stop the parental secrecy policy. In stopping the parental secrecy policy, and I talked to Mark Spanagle, his chief of staff, about this, basically I said, what gives the federal government the right to have jurisdiction over California law? well, we don't have jurisdiction. I said, that's right. I said, so how can you help in this, and how can you stop a policy? And he said, well, we can defund the schools. And I said, okay, so if you defund the schools that have this policy, how much of the money out of 100% does the federal government give? And he told me 55 to 60%. And I said, well, what if Gavin Newsom just tells you to pound sand? And he says, well, what do you mean? It's a lot of money. I go, well, what do you mean? Well, is it really a lot of money? State of California is anywhere from what, number 7 to number 4, depending on who you ask, maybe number 5, on the largest largest economy in the world. They basically have got any way they can tax, anything they want to do, any way they want to put in legislation, they can, because they have an overwhelming majority in the Assembly, in the Senate, and with the governor. So what's the difference? What if Gavin Newsom says, hey, I don't need the money? And what if Gavin Newsom says, basically what we're going to do, because we're going to use a law, 2013 AB 1266, requires all kindergarten through 12th grade public schools to permit biological boys in girls' restroom, showers, clubs, sports teams, and biological girls in boys' bathroom, showers, clubs, and sports teams. The right to violate these sexual boundaries is based solely on a self-declaration of a different gender, including athletic teams and competitions, and use of the facilities consistent with his or her gender identity, irrespective to the gender listed on the pupil's records. So if the governor says, you know what, basically, I don't need your money, I know how to get this money. And he said, because of AB 1266, what I'm going to do is I'm going to add 10 cents a gallon to every gallon of gas. And, oh, I think I'll make that diesel. And, hey, what about jet fuel? And I'll do that to every gallon of gas, and I don't need your money. And so I asked Mark Spanigold, how many people do you think gas up in the state of California a day? And before you answer that, think about it. Starts at the Mexican border and goes to Oregon. Oh, and what about airplanes? I said, how many? 30, 40 million, 50 million? Oh, and airplanes? How long do you think it would cost, how long do you think it would take him to make $1 billion? And Mark was quiet. And then he said, well, probably not long. And he said, basically, you guys in California are on your own. So I'm listening to what Patricia's saying on how she wants to have some options and a nonprofit, which is, I think, a good idea. And also in the Assembly of one of 17 Republicans, what would you do to turn around the referendum and turn around and say, okay, well, that doesn't apply? And how do you stop Gavin Newsom from doing that? He doesn't need federal money. So the funding's out the door. There's no way that we can do anything with funding in the state. There's no way. Because he can enact all these different laws, and Patricia's brought forth 20 of them, that he can go back to and say, it's the right of these children, and because of that, I'm going to make sure that they have that right.
And the audience that I have talked to totally agrees. I totally agree with you as well. But they are concerned about the funding. What about the funding? How can we do this? Because Christian schools are so expensive. And that is where this lady that grew up in Aetna, she approached me this last week and said that they've got a Christian school that's running, or a private school, she said, a private school that's running. It's a one house, and it's multiple grades, and it's very doable financially for families that have one income. And I came from one of those families, as you guys did as well. And it's exciting to hear other things that are coming forward. Yeah. And let's face it, when it comes down to it, all my thoughts, but God, and then God, and suddenly God. So I totally trust the Lord. And, you know, and Patricia's totally right. Is this fixable? No. But God, and then God, and suddenly God. And Patricia knows and feels the same way. Mm-hmm. And God's the only answer when it comes to our kids, but they are our kids, and we've got to protect and take care of them.
And it's our responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that, as Patricia said, she made the sacrifice because she believed she was responsible. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's going to take. And, you know, if you trust God, then you're going to have to trust he's going to give you the finances and the way to do it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And you know, exactly right. We hear that a lot. Yeah. Well, you know, God's in charge. Well, here's the deal. God creates everything in 24-hour increments, right? So we're thinking about the future. We're thinking about this. We're thinking about that, how we're planning this and how we're planning that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're right. Your faith and where you stand is where you need to be.
That's right.
So, again, I think that reinforces her argument in the fact that, you know, defunding doesn't mean anything. I mean, you know, or funding, you know, it, we can't defund the schools because it won't matter. Newsom can just pass a tax. 63-17, 32-8, in the spawn of Satan.
Well, what they did during the COVID thing. Okay, so ADA was always a big deal, right? Average daily attendance. So during COVID, they didn't have that average daily attendance. So what they did was they changed it so that they based the money that they got on their average daily attendance for the last 3 years. So now if everybody, you know, if half of the people took their kids out of school today, they'd still be getting a bunch of money because they changed the law. And so my feeling is I don't care about them giving us vouchers. This is my own opinion. Not every person who believes in alternate education agrees with this. I personally don't like a voucher because I believe when the government has their hand on the money that they hand you, they keep their hand there. And that money is going to come with, always come with strings attached. So, I mean, it comes with strings attached to the public schools.
That's
Why
right.
wouldn't it come with strings attached to us?
100%.
And so, to me, I think a tax credit is a better way to go for us. I think that we should get a tax credit, and that tax credit should be in the same amount of the ADA that they give to the public schools.
Right, and so people know that tax credit would come off the taxes you owe.
Exactly. And so I think that that would be probably the best way to deal with as far as the government financing part of it goes. But then the other thing is that, you know, we have other ways, like the nonprofit that I'm talking about, starting a nonprofit that simply raises money for the purpose of helping families pay that tuition. Because I know the economy's bad, and I know it's tough out there, and I know there are people who really cannot. They're a single mom. What do a single mom do?
Sure.
And she's got to work. You know, she needs some help. And so we need to come up with good solutions. And just getting elected to a board, that's not it. And I'm so sad that we are losing this army of young people out there that are finally engaged and they finally want to change the school system. And yet they're spending their time spinning their wheels on these campaigns that are not going to change anything in the long run.
What a great point.
And all they're doing is maybe they're making a difference for their own kid right now, but let's think about the next generation. Let's think about their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren. We've got to do something that's going to affect generations of children. If we really care so much about other people's kids, let's start thinking about next generation and the generation after that. And just getting somebody on a school board ain't going to do it, because someday you're going to quit or you're going to get tossed out. Somebody else is going to get elected, and everything's going to change back to the way it was anyway. So nobody's going to be able to keep that going.
Okay, we have a caller on the line. Roberta, we are starting to run a little short on time. What you got,
okay,
Roberta?
Okay, I'll make it quick. My daughter's in Riverside County. She could be telling the exact story that you're hearing here. She pulled her kids out of school, homeschooled them, made the sacrifice to live on one income, and two of her boys have graduated now and are in college as 4.0 students. She still has one, a 15-year-old, that she needs to get through the system. So she has pulled away totally from the school district and is doing it on her own.
God bless her.
God bless.
Well, it looks like we have another caller on the line. Okay, we have another caller on the line. And Christina's scrambling to write the name down. Here we go. Here we go. It is. Anyway, let's just put the caller on. Go ahead, just put the caller on.
Roberta?
Okay, go ahead. Just go ahead and put the caller on. Go ahead.
I guess the caller is here, Anna Chambler.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Okay.
So good morning. Good morning to all of you.
Sure, good morning.
This is Janet Chambler. Good morning, Patricia. I love your talk about schooling. Let's look at it from a different angle, however. The state should never be in control of schools.
Right.
It should be completely in charge of the families, the parents, and the community.
Mm-hmm.
and that means the state of Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
Put, take taxes away from the state. Don't charge people for schools. Let them finance it on their own with the help of no taxes. And then they can decide what they want to do. You don't have to worry about what the state is doing. It is not their prerogative anyway. Schools should always be private and run by the parents. And it has not been that long in our history that we have had public schools. So let's return to the way that it was when we actually did good education.
Janet, is your thoughts in the Jefferson Constitution?
I've got it right here. She did. She wrote it.
Yeah,
she wrote it
right there.
Yeah. I have it. I've been using it. Janet is the godmother of Jefferson.
Yes.
And so anyway, we don't have time to read that portion now, but maybe we will. Especially Section 2, Board of Education. The Board of Education shall fulfill an advisory function only, and shall act as a liaison with private organizations for the purposes of standardizing testing, accreditation, curricula, acquisitions, and other assistance that may be requested. The board shall also act as a conduit to facilitate the distribution of federal funds with the educational entities at all levels within the state, including but not limited to K through 12 schools, higher education, trade schools, and career academies and training schools. And Janet Chandler is the author of almost all of that. And Janet, you'll all the CRAs down in Southern California are hearing that stuff too. So you're another one
Excellent.
Who's real popular down there, Mama Jefferson. So anyway,
We all know that if the federal government or the state government gives you money, they own you.
That's right.
Yeah.
So
let's
take back our servitude to them and manage our own schools with our own money and not give it to the state to filter through.
I agree 100%.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing, you know, the two of you, the sacrifice. You know, I know Janet was a teacher for years and taught us a lot of stuff and just as a friend. And so, you know, when you look at all of this, you're so right about everything you're saying. I mean, what is to stop? Come on. And even maybe for Melissa Hunt, I mean, think about this. What's to stop the legislative body from saying, because Newsom wants to, hey, guess what? School boards don't have any control over curriculum anymore. That's up to us. It's a state curriculum. That's the way it is. Go pound sand.
Well,
how do we fight that?
That's where they're going now.
That's exactly where they're going.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Exactly.
We got another call.
I homeschooled my own two sons for a while, and I know the absolute joy and reward that comes with it. So thank you, Patricia, for what you're doing, and I will say goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Janet.
Bye, Janet.
I don't know if we have another caller or not. No. Okay, this is phones are lighting up, but she's handling it over there. So, Patricia, we were talking about the nonprofit, the other options we have. I mean, here's the bottom line, folks, and this is something that, you know, we need to really get a handle on. You cannot fix the unfixable.
No.
You cannot fix the school system. It is broken. Is that your assessment?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I don't know what my assessment was until I met Janet Chandler, and then I met Patricia. And, you know, they really solidified where we were because we knew we weren't going to send our kids off to public schools. But, again, it's the type of thing where, looks like we have Melissa Hunt back on the phone again. Okay. Go ahead, Melissa.
That is exactly the conversation I wanted you guys to have, because people need to know that, yes, those funds are followed, and we can't have the funds or the vouchers following everybody. So thank you. I appreciate your conversation. Good conversation. It's always interesting with Patricia.
It is. Dominic will tell you that.
You guys have a great day. Now I'm going to hang up. Thank you,
Dominic,
Gary.
Will be the first one to tell you that. Yeah, so, you know, I mean, that's the thing, Patricia, you really nailed it out here, and I have to, I mean, regardless of whether you agree with her or not, or you agree with this conversation or not, somebody at least is bringing the dialogue forward. Somebody at least has the courage to stand by their convictions. And it's funny, we haven't got one phone call or anything that's talked about, gee whiz, you know, we really need to protect these public schools. I haven't heard a thing yet. Where are you guys? I mean, I have people that are banging their head against the wall. Let's do another initiative.
Melissa, right. Melissa, are you still on the phone?
No, she's gone.
Okay.
Sir.
Oh,
no,
she is.
Oh, she is.
She's on. You're like the gift that keeps on giving.
Hey,
I mean, you may as well just drive on down here. I got a stool.
Melissa, I just want listeners to know that the Shasta County Republican Assembly did endorse you as our, you know, our membership unanimously. And,
yes, sir.
And,
thank you so much for that as well.
Well, that's okay. She'll be sitting in your living room when you get home. So
she's always welcome. She's been there before.
Yes, that's right.
You don't go hungry at Dominic's house. You never go hungry. Ever. You don't go hungry.
I know
there.
Dominic's a great cook.
Oh, yes. I mean, it's great, you know. And he stands and looks at you until you eat.
Yes, he does.
So it's okay.
Bye, guys. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, this argument has just gotten so crazy in the fact that, gee whiz, the state's control. What's wrong with this sentence? State-controlled funds for schools.
Right.
State-controlled curriculum. Mm-hmm. What's wrong with that sentence? Mm-hmm. Government-controlled schools. Government-controlled curriculum. Government-controlled money for schools. What's wrong with that? Anybody know? Right? I mean, you know, it's sort of like, you know, we keep going down this road. You talked about other options, which is great. You talked about a nonprofit, which could be a 501c3. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe there's a philanthropist out there who is going to say, okay, I'm going to start this 501c3, or somebody could start it to help these folks.
Right. Sure.
But, you know, really, it's sort of like, you know, let's go back to faith. Okay, where's your faith?
Right.
Okay, you know, when we got the kids into private school, I wasn't making a lot of money. I had to work harder.
Mm-hmm.
I had to work longer and harder.
Right.
Okay, and I'm not, that's just what you have to do.
Sure.
You have to do what you have to do.
You do what you
Okay,
do.
That's what Dominic did.
Yeah.
You know, that's right. And then the thing is you have to have that position of having the responsibility, you know. And yeah, we've got a couple of minutes left. We only have about 4 minutes left, but what about single moms? Go ahead.
Single moms they do it. I had single moms in my school, and when you learn about homeschooling, you find out that it's not anything like traditional schooling. So it's not like you have to sit there with your kids 8 hours a day doing that. You know, there are ways to work around it. There's ways to make school work around your work schedule. If you have family members, you can have family members that can help you out. Grandma and grandpa are great for that, you know. But honestly, there are going to be people out there that just cannot do that. And these are the people who really do need help. And we need some kind of a nonprofit that can do the investigations to make sure that it's not people taking advantage.
Right.
That it's really the people who truly do need the financial help so that their kids will have an opportunity to go to the right kind of schools where they're going to have their worldviews and their values reinforced all day long, so mom doesn't have to have that as an extra thing to worry about on top of being a single mom and working all the time.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think schools a lot of times are babysitters.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
it's a babysitter, not just for single moms.
Right. No,
for everybody,
not at all.
You know,
for everybody.
It's,
yeah.
For everybody.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we you know, the symptoms of what's going on in these schools is the symptoms of what we have in our country and in our state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but really and truly, I believe that, I mean, the children are the number one issue.
Right.
You know, when we teach in different situations as far as taking your local government, it's a board of supervisors, school boards, and the ROV office.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily in that order. I think that the children do come first.
Yeah.
And I think that what we need to do is have another couple of programs like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd like to have another program to where Patricia comes in, and I'd like to hear more from folks. We'll advertise it a bit. And I think that what we need to do is start understanding that we can't keep doing the same thing that never worked. So we have about a minute and a half left. My dear, bring us home.
Well, I just want to ask people to think about what their tipping point is. At what point do you decide that I can't do this any longer? I can't expose my children to this any longer. And I know that there are Christians out there who say, well, my kids are salt and light. Well, salt is salt is the word. Salt is knowing who you are and where you stand in the Lord, and you can't give that out if you don't have it. What 5-year-old is full of the salt? That they don't have that.
Yep.
Just because they go to Sunday school and they sing Jesus Loves Me doesn't mean that they are missionaries. They are not prepared for what is going on, the torrent that is brought against them in a public school situation. They don't have what it takes to fight that. So putting them in a public school system is like taking your little 5-year-old who knows how to dog paddle around in your swimming pool out to the river.
The news from Town Hall is...
So with that, we're going to have to leave it there. Patricia Santangelo, Dominic Santangelo, thank you. And time has come for 51. Let's get it done.